voices. Unedited, uncut, unfiltered, unflappable. Bringing you glory to the green. Representing One Nation. Mean Green Nation. It's time for the Mean Green Nation podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, after some delay, it's a Mean Green Nation podcast. Brought to you live on the, I guess, from MeanGreenNation.com. I'm your friend and fellow alum, Adam. With me, as always, is Mr. Greg. How you doing, Greg, today?
I'm hanging in there, sluggish, but getting through. And I'm not your friend.
Not your goddamn friend. Yeah, so today, ladies and gentlemen, it's a big day. It's a big day for a number of reasons. We have lots of stuff to discuss, including a banner from the Minute Few. That sounds like, you know, Game of Thrones, like group, you know. It was like, you know, like the Brave Companions, the Minute Few. Yeah, so we play a big money game this week, and that's always fun because we get to have this discussion about where we stand in the college football hierarchy. We get to either be depressed or talk ourselves into an upset. It kind of, you know, goes both ways. This year we're more depressed than we are talking ourselves into an upset. Last year, our big game was the Texas game. I mean, we had an Iowa game earlier this season, but we were more optimistic going into that one than we are this one. But anyway, that's coming up. We're going to talk about that one. The big news, I guess the biggest North Texas news, is the banner. It flew. The folks at GoMeanGreen.com put their money together. They flew a banner, and we'll talk about that one. And lest we forget, let's talk about the Louisiana Tech game. They destroyed us 56-13, and I watched everything. I watched, you know, from snap to snap, and we'll talk about that one. We'll review that. I think that killed the Canales to head coach whispers. I don't know what you want to call that. So, we'll get to those things. A little bit stuff about soccer. We'll talk about, obviously, DeMarcus Smith. We'll talk about Antoine Jimerson maybe quitting the team in spirit. Lots of stuff about that. Soccer, they won the tournament. We'll get to that. That's towards the end of the show. And, obviously, the coaching search. We'll get to that. It's everybody's favorite topic. Like, who's going to be the coach? Especially when you watch the team lose. I think even the woman mentioned something like that. Like, well, at least there's going to be a new guy here and replace this. and then finally we'll take your Twitter questions and answers. I don't think Antoine Jimerson is giving us questions, so we can't take your Twitter Q&As. But yeah, that's for the end of the show. Ladies and gentlemen, let's jump right into this thing and talk about the banner. Fun in your tum-tum. So I guess the quickest way to we talked about this on the show previously, Greg. It was the episode entitled Banner Day. So if you want to go back and listen to our thoughts on it, like, do we think it's useful? Do we think it should be done? Whatever. Just a quick review of that. I think it's fine. People can express their feelings however they choose to do it. And they did today. It was at lunch. He flew for about an hour. Christopher Walker, friend of the show, friend of the podcast, friend of the blog also, and defender of me on Twitter, said, said, hey, yeah, they scheduled it. They did it for an hour. He's been a vocal proponent of it. What did you think of the banner day?
I thought it got a little bit more hype than originally a lot of people thought it was going to. I kind of think that the idea of flying it at a game where the only people that were going to see it were going to be the people that really talked about it on GoMeanGreen, as opposed to the students, you know, it kind of got them involved, and it was kind of sad to see all the tweets about who is this RV guy? Who is this Villarreal guy? Like, they didn't even know who the athletic director was. So that was a little bit disappointing. But then again, there were the students who knew who he was, and there wasn't a lot of people out there saying that it was a bad thing. It was just kind of, they thought it was a joke, Even some of the players, you know, had some about it. You know, Carlos Harris, Ryan Renfro, two of the more outspoken people on the team this year, in social media at least. So, yeah, I thought it was interesting at how fast it took off. You know, there was one kid that, I don't even know if he goes to UNT, he just tweets, he's like, hey, there's a banner saying fire Rick Villarreal flying around, you know, hey, what's up with that? And then from there, it just kind of exploded and, you know, everybody started talking about it, at least within the UNT realm. And then some sports media guys got into it, you know, Brett McMurphy, I think that's his name from ESPN. He had a couple tweets about it and, you know, of course, Vito and the North Texas Daily got into it, you know, too. So, you know, I think it's interesting when you get the students involved and hopefully they take more, you know, they look into it more, because we've seen, obviously this isn't like the Missouri situation at all and, you know, whatever's going on over there. But still, you see the power of the students. And if the students want change, you know, that may be the only way to change the athletic director. You know, maybe the student athletes get involved too. So I think it's a good thing to let the students see it. I think it was a good time to fly the banner. And I mean, I don't think it was distasteful at all. I wonder how RV took it. Like, I wonder where he was looking at all the tweets, because you know he was. I wonder, like, I mean, you know, what do you think?
Sorry, I was speaking on mute. It's like I'm at work all over again. I mean, you know, like, honestly, that wasn't for RV. Like, the banner wasn't for him. So I don't really care what he thinks. I mean, I think he thinks that I think we kind of get an idea of what he thinks about all this stuff by just looking back on his previous interviews with Scott Sidwell and the things he said in his press conferences, and then his like appearance on the Go Mean Green podcast. I mean, you kind of get in all of that media blitz, if you can call it that, was mostly aimed to address this, right? He knew some people were going to see fire RV, and so he wanted to say, well, let me tell you what, it's just a couple of people that are being crazy, don't listen to them, and let me give you my resume all over again. And, you know, like I said, it's not for him. We're not going to convince him, you know what, you're right, I did do a terrible job, I'm going to quit. and, yeah, this has, like, nothing to do with, like, the things that are going on at Mizzou, mostly because, like, those concern greater things than firing the athletic director for sucking. But it's similar in that it's, you know, people expressing things through, I guess, non-traditional ways, right? I mean, there's something to be said about, like, demonstrations. And, I mean, there's a lot of people against this, and there's not a I think there's folks on GoMeGreen.com, like you said, that kind of led the charge. And there's a lot of people that still are like, this is not good use of our time and money. It did spark a conversation. I think I just reading right now that a couple people were like, yeah, people that are totally unrelated to the program or have been for, like, 10 to 5 years are like, hey, what's up with this? So at least sparks a discussion. As far as marketing the program, I mean, it got a little bump and like, what's going on up there at North Texas? Oh, well, they do suck. I guess they will want to fire their AD. I don't think anybody really cares. I mean, not that many people really cared about other high-profile athletic director firings, like even with the Michigan guy or the Texas guy. You know, you're like, why do they want to fire him again? Like, what is the deal? Like, a lot of people don't really interact with the athletic director. Like, how often? You see him around, you're like, what does he do? I don't know. Nobody, a lot of people don't know what they do. So, I think it's fun. I think, whatever. If that's what you want, you think that he's a problem, and you wrote a letter. I think we've known people who wrote letters, email, and they've gotten certain responses from it. You know, I think everybody contributes to the university. We're all part of the university. And college sports are unique in that way, and that they're not like, say, like San Antonio Spurs. If I don't like the GM, I mean, what am I going to do? Like, fire the GM. I don't want to go. The only way I can, you know, fight that would be with not giving him money, right? Well, I'm not going to support the NBA, and that's going to be that. That's how I'll protest, you know, San Antonio Spurs not running it the way I think they should be run. University sports are different because they rely on your donations. They rely on a lot of things. And you can, you know, they're public organizations, sort of. And so you can do things differently. And I think this for me, this is like a viable way to do it. I do agree with some other people, some Twitter friends, that say it could have been done a little bit more coordinated. There could have been like a campaign that better elucidated all the points. So that way, when they Google Fire Rick Vireal, there's a FireRickVireal.com, and there is a FireRV.com. But that's what I'm saying. It's like, are you going to know to go to that? Somebody should have bought some Twitter ad. I mean, some search ads, right? So when I search Fire Rick Vireal, it pops up and it says, "Hey, go to FireRV.com and let me tell you what's what." So yeah, it could have been better coordinated. And I mean, maybe. Hint says something about North Texas. We do some things half-assed. Maybe that's just us. Maybe that's just our way of doing things. I don't know, man. It did get some social media notice, and it's gonna have a nice little long tail afterward. People are like, what is that banner? What, there's a banner? Yeah, search it on Twitter, and they're gonna see it. They're gonna see all the retweets. And there you go. So that's what I think. I think it was fine.
At the end of the day, you know, the purpose was to, you know, get the higher ups to see it and to do something. Will anything be done because there was a banner flowing around? Probably not. Is there more pressure? Yeah, I think there was. I think the message came across that, hey, there's people that care enough to fly a banner around to spend their money on it. And these are people that could be donating money to the university, but instead they're using it to get somebody out of, you know, power, out of their power position. So I don't think we remove RV, you know, tomorrow. I don't think they come out with a statement like Missouri's president, hey, he's being forced to step down. No, but the pressure is there. The pressure is real and it's mounting on RV, and he's really relying on this coach search to kind of, you know, calm everybody down, to show that he's good enough to be the athletic director and that he deserves to stay for a few more years. And I mean, even that, he's kind of screwing up right now too. So
yeah, and you know, it means that I take it to mean that we're a little bit more like, we as a fan base, and because it's a really tiny fan base comparatively speaking, there are a lot of diehard, you know, Texas fans that have just as much, you know, ridiculous things to do, but we're not easily ignored, I guess. Is that, that's good to know that, you know, I mean, maybe they're not, at least not taking us for granted, because nobody wants to be taken for granted, whether you're, you know, like actually fighting for some causes that mean something for society, or whether you're fighting to have a decent football team. Everybody wants to be taken seriously, and I feel that maybe ours hasn't been taken so seriously. Now it is, so that's good. All right, so is there anything else? Any other points you want to make about this banner? If you want to see it, like what was up with the banner, there's lots of pictures on the internet. But I did a quick post earlier, and I basically just embedded Christopher Walker's tweet, and that has the banner flying over along with some musics, the school song. So check it out. Check it out. Tell us what you think.
It was pretty epic there by Mr. Walker to get the fight song and the bells playing with the banner. I mean, yeah. Come on, that's pretty awesome. Not awesome for RV, yeah. But awesome for us.
Yeah, you can't. I mean, that's the thing. It's like you can't. This doesn't matter what RV thinks. I mean, he did enough of things to make it where people were flying banners to get him fired. You know what I mean? I think that says something, you know, been around 15 years and you're getting destroyed in by an FCS team. If that's all it says, like, hey, we're displeased by that, I think that's enough, you know, it's enough of a point to be made. Let's see. What else we got here on the topic list? Let's talk about an embarrassing thing that happened. Played Louisiana Tech, one of the better teams in Conference USA. probably the second best team. I think clearly the second best team, the first being Western Kentucky. Western Kentucky destroyed us 55-28, and Louisiana Tech did the same, 56-13. And this one was a lot less close than was the Western Kentucky game. And I find that interesting a little bit, but then not so much, because I think that Louisiana Tech is strong in the places that we're weak, whereas like Western Kentucky is stronger, and you know the strength is like passing the ball, and we can do okay defending the pass. Okay, like I mean, comparatively speaking, comparative strength, right? And you know we did some okay things at times against Western Kentucky, but Wales ran all over us. Western Kentucky's guy, and he is not Kenneth Dixon. Well, I did a little Michael Strahan there. Kenneth Dixon ran for 197 yards. Was it 197? 95 yards. Six touchdowns. And Louisiana Tech looked meh when they tried to throw it against us, and they looked unstoppable when they tried to run it. And that's not all that surprising, because you can run on this North Texas team. And where can you run? Oh, right up the middle. Right through the A-gap. What were your impressions, I mean, offensively, defensively, I mean, wherever you want? There's not – it all looked pretty bad, so, you know, it's, I don't know if there's any point in making any distinctions, but go ahead.
You can't go on the road and start like we did against Louisiana Tech. I missed out on the first quarter. I was listening to it, but I missed out on watching the first quarter and about halfway through the second quarter because we're having a baby shower. And – then I watched the rest of it. It was very disappointing to watch it. And, you know, I would even say that Louisiana Tech may be even better now than Western Kentucky. When they played each other early, it was really early in the season. They played at Western Kentucky. Louisiana Tech only lost by, I think it was like 3 points in that game. And I would say that Jeff Driscoll throughout the year has just been getting progressively better. And they have tons of weapons there. Like you mentioned, Dixon. He hadn't been a huge weapon for them all year. I mean, he was good, but he hasn't been like the Dixon that we've known in the previous years. So where I think that we struggle, and you said they were a little bit different than Western Kentucky. I think Western Kentucky, even though they ran all over us, I think we struggle with teams that get under center and they run right at us. I think teams that run out of the shotgun, for some reason, we do a little bit better against those type of teams. It seems like our defensive line works a little bit better, but for whatever it is, when somebody gets it under center and wants to run power or zone, you know, blocking scheme, we got no answer for it. And we just get gashed and we get gashed and we get gashed. I thought Skip Holtz was kind of a dick for leaving his players, you know, his first team in there that long. I didn't see the purpose in getting Kenneth Dixon, you know, six touchdowns. It seemed like, you know, once Marcus Smith got hurt, that kind of changed his tune and he took all the starters out. I bet you that if Marcus Smith wouldn't have got hurt on that drive, he would have put the starters back in. I don't know what kind of point he was trying to make or if he didn't like Coach Canales or whatever, but the game was over about midway through the third quarter. So it's a rainy day. Why are you going to – I mean, what if Jeff Driscoll gets hurt there? What if Dixon gets hurt? We weren't coming back. We weren't moving the ball against your defense. So why even have the stars out there? So, I mean, I get it. We have to stop them. That's our purpose out there. You know, you always hear that when teams look like they're running it up. Well, hey, stop. Still, I didn't agree with that. Our offense, I mean – Wilson had the fumble issues come back up, and part of that is he had them last year, but again, and he runs too hard. So sometimes you just got to go down. He tries to fight for extra yards. People hold him up, strip the ball. It was a wet day. It just looked like we didn't want to be there. We didn't want to be there at all.
Well, I don't know if I saw that, like they didn't want to be there, but I know one guy didn't want to be there. And he didn't go. So maybe you have a point.
I can't blame him. Hey, coach, it's going to rain. That's not my thing, bro.
Yeah. The way I mean, it's kind of disappointing. that Jeffrey Wilson played so poorly, because he didn't play so poorly outside of those very specific plays where he did bad. And by those, I mean the fumbles. And, I mean, I feel like he felt like he had such a good game a few games in a row that he was kind of, I won't say like he's feeling himself, but like he's just like, he thought, hey, I'm the star, I got to make plays. And that's not a bad attitude to have, but you have to know when to make those plays. First down from your own 30, maybe not the time to make that. When you're right next to the goal line, maybe late in the game. I don't know. You have to kind of pace yourself. I don't know. But as far as like effort plays, it's hard for me to get mad at those things. But technique things, you can hold the two hands on the ball. You can do that kind of stuff. You can, you know, get stronger, hold on to the ball better. He fumbled a lot. And some of that was the wet conditions, but you got to be prepared for that. You got to know it's wet, so I can't run the way I'd normally run. Let me change it up, handle the ball better. That's the thing that you got to prepare for that thing.
It was just a bad matchup for us.
Yeah,
the way that Louisiana Tech, you know, we talked about in the podcast last week, I told you they were going to be very aggressive. Mm-hmm. They were going to play in our backfield. They have a defensive lineman, Vernon Butler. He's going to the NFL. Ferguson leading a bunch of statistical categories, sacks, tackle for losses. They do those things well. That was a bad matchup for our offense, who was going to have to rely on the running game. Okay, well, they took that away from us. They clearly shut it down. You know, we didn't know if they'd be able to shut it down, but they pretty much they neutralized DeMarcus Smith, and that, you know, we're able then to focus on Jeffrey Wilson, took away the running game, forced us to throw the ball with kind of an inaccurate quarterback in a rainstorm. It just didn't, it wasn't going to work out.
Well, yeah, that was the thing, is that like we needed to be able, if we were going to run on them, we needed to be able to run and like a very specific kind of way, and that was with Jeffrey Wilson and then DeMarcus Smith while they're focusing on it. And that meant that we had to hit the open passes when they were there. I'll throw this out, though. Jeffrey Wilson averaged 4.2 yards a carry against them. 16 carries, 67 yards. And we pretty much stopped really trying to run about early third quarter. And again, some of that was because we were fumbling the ball all over the damn place and going down by a lot. And DeMarcus Smith had 45 yards, and that includes, you know, getting sacked. A lot of the lost yardage, 35 of it to be exact, was on that punt play. So, I don't want to discount what Louisiana Tech did. They were a tough defense. They were one of the tougher ones, but it's not like they, you know, completely held our dude like Alabama held Leonard Fournette. Jeffrey Wilson got on the edge and he got some yards. We had some big runs. What killed this team was his turnovers. And, I mean, that's part of being a bad team. You find a way to lose, really. And the way we lost today was not being able to stop them on defense and turn the ball over on offense and on special teams. So, yeah. You know, that was it. This is not a good football team. We don't even have to beat around a bush. But it's not a good football team. You know, like we said this before in previewing other games, we have to play perfectly in order to have a chance. It's not even like, well, we know the offense is going to be the offense. If the defense could just play okay, you know, no. It's like if everything goes right, maybe we can score 30 points. If everything goes right, maybe we can hold the team to 30 points. You know, that's not really how you build a team. And, again, that's not because we don't have talented players. We do, right? Jeffrey Wilson's talented. DeMarcus Smith is talented in a very specific kind of way. And that way it's not throwing the ball. But, we have some talented defensive backs. We have some talent in the linebacker spot and some talent on the defensive line. But they are not producing at the level that we need them to produce for this to be a bowl team, let alone a conference championship contender, let alone anything nationally. So, you know, there's a long way to go. I think a good coach would come here and fix all that. But, yeah, that was a bad show in there. I don't think that they're as bad as they showed at times against Louisiana Tech, but they are because, you know, they lost that way. And we've seen them lose this way before, so, yeah. They're getting gashed up the middle on defense, turn the ball over on offense. I want to ask you about DeMarcus Smith because I thought he played pretty poorly. particularly on some of those wide-ass open passes, the short stuff. I mean, what's the deal with that? Do you see something wrong with his technique? Is it he's overthinking it? Because he was hitting those when he was under pressure, and I think the broadcast made a good mention of that. But, I mean, I don't know how you improve that outside of just practice, just reps. But is that mental? What is that? Do you have the yips?
A little bit of mental, a little bit of technique. When you see – when you're a quarterback, you see somebody that wide open, the last thing you're trying to do is miss him. You just want to get the ball there, make sure he has a chance to catch it. Like the Jeffrey Wilson pass. Jeffrey Wilson should have caught that ball. Yeah, could it have been better thrown? Absolutely. One of the things that I've seen is like, okay, he's a strong-armed quarterback, and – it seems to be that, you know, he only has one speed, and that's full throttle. When he tries to throttle that back, it's almost like he's trying to he's not throwing it with a true motion there. He's just kind of – he's trying to drop it. He's trying to –
it's kind of like check swinging it a little bit. Yeah, he's like – he just kind of like letting it go. It's not real –
It's not a complete pass. It's almost like he's trying to aim it in there rather than throw it in there is what I'm trying to do.
Yeah.
Trying to tell you. So, I mean, I just want him to go out there and just throw the ball. I think that's what you have to remove the part as a quarterback of thinking too much. He's thinking too much out on the field. When he's under pressure, he doesn't have time to think. I got to make a play. You know, shit. Yeah, I mean, I'm sorry. He's got to, you know, run around, you know, hit somebody in the open, whatever it is. Just make a play. I mean, Johnny Manziel, you know, just make a play. But when you get – and there's times when you see him back there where, okay, he goes through the three-step drop, steps up pocket, and he delivers the ball nice, accurate, and you're like, hey, that's what I like to see him do. If I was Coach Canales, I'd sit down with him on, you know, Wednesday or Thursday and say, okay, what passes do you feel most comfortable with? If you don't feel comfortable with throwing, you know, the flare pass, then we're not going to throw it. You know, we're not going to throw it until you feel comfortable. Do you feel comfortable with the slant? Okay, you do. You know, because you know that you got to put full effort. You got to throw it in there hard, and he does that well. So, okay, then we're going to put a lot more slant patterns in there. Things like that. I think you could work with it because he's not. Some guys make it out to seem like he's terrible. Some guys make it seem like he's not accurate and he can't do anything right. I mean, he's averaging for, you know, total yards in a game, 254 total yards. That's rushing and throwing. Andrew McNulty was 169. So there he's given us 85 yards more per game. And the passing, there's not a whole lot of difference between what McNulty was giving us versus what DeMarcus Smith is giving us. So there's no reason why he shouldn't be out there, and there's no reason why you shouldn't work on him for next year. So I think there's – if we have a good coach in here, a good offensive coordinator, a good mind that can build the quarterback up, you know, tear him down, build him back up because he's got all the tools, you know, work with him on the reads, you know, work with him on the what he feels comfortable with throwing. He could be a good quarterback. He could be like a Dreyfus Jackson from Rice.
Yeah, and we're running the risk of overhyping his potential every week on the podcast because we say the same thing. Like, he does have the tools. I guess what I'm wondering is because, you know, again, we don't have access to practice, but I bet what's happening is that in practice he's hitting that short stuff pretty consistently. And because he's hitting the short stuff when he's pressured, he's hitting the short stuff when he's doing a play action thing. Again, because, like you said, it's just like this total motion, he doesn't have to overthink it. But there was just a couple times where he's like going through his progressions, which is cool, and then he sees an open guy and he has to just kind of hit him short that he's completely whiffing on that. And it's that kind of stuff that you need. You absolutely need to sustain a drive. And so I wonder if like in practice he's hitting those and then the game he's messing up, which tells me, like you said, he just needs more time doing that kind of thing, just more comfort doing it. Like he just has to get out of the system. I mean, you know, it's like a Brett Favre thing. You remember he'd always start out a game and then overthrow his guys, you know, by like 10 yards. And then he'd calm down.
Yeah.
And he's another one of these guys that had like a rocket arm also, so he's just full of adrenaline.
The one the one series where he threw the interception, Jeffrey Wilson on the wheel route, he made good throws early in that drive.
Yeah.
To move us down the field. I was like, you know, those are the throws that I want to keep, you know, keep seeing you make. And then the thing on the wheel route was earlier in the game, they ran a wheel route. It was wide open and he didn't throw it to him. And this time you could see from the moment that the ball was snapped, he had his mind made up. I'm going to Jeffrey Wilson. Yeah. And there's three guys and he was like, okay. And another thing is like when he tries to put touch on the ball, it's just like a forced action.
Yeah.
He's trying to put touch. He's not just throwing it. Just throw it. That's all I want you to do.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think he's like concerned that he's going to put too much on and overthrow it. Yeah, I mean, like you said, he's aiming it instead of just throwing it. And on that particular play, he underthrew it, surprisingly. And I think, again, that was a lot of him just trying to put, you know, get the ball to him. He underthrew it. And so what would have been, because that was not a terrible pass. I mean, Jeffrey Wilson had his man beat. If he drops it in there, and we see every week college quarterbacks dropping it in there, and definitely in the NFL, it's possible. It's not the greatest throw, but it's a college football FBS throw. You can make that throw, and maybe someone's like, "What are you thinking?" And you're like, "Oh, coach, I know I can drop it in there and in that bucket." Well, he underthrew it, and you underthrow that kind of route. It's like they had the safety coming over. They both went up, and so the ball popped up. Three guys going after the ball, Jeffrey Wilson, two defenders, and the ball bounces to another guy. And that's – so he threw it into what turned out to be triple coverage because he underthrew a guy that was open. And that's what happens when you do that into the zone. You have to be accurate. If I was defending him, I'd zone him all day and force him to drop it in there because I don't think that DeMarcus Smith can do it consistently enough. You know?
No.
And when he misses, it's pick city.
Right. But he hasn't really thrown a lot of interceptions.
Yeah, that's
true. You know, and I think the one throw he had towards the end of the game where he hit Carlos Harris on the slant route, those are the throws. That's it. If he can master the slant route, I think we may be in business. That's mm-hmm. really the route I want him to master this year. The timing, the slants. I think that would take our offense, you know, to another level. It would certainly help out. One route combination I don't understand is we got, you know, the double nine routes, basically the four verticals.
Yeah.
Our guys are running so close together. It's almost like Coach Canales says, look, run close together because he probably doesn't know who he's going to throw to, and he's probably going to miss the guy that he wants to, but just in case, if you're close to him, then you might catch it.
Was that one that I think went to Thaddeus Thompson? I think somebody ran the wrong route there. I think it was supposed to be something. Either that they just lined up wrong. Something went wrong there because they were, like you said, they were both running in the same area, and that's ridiculous if that was actually a play, and I don't believe that it was.
But they ran it on the other side of the field, too. Like it's happened in more than one time in a game, is what I'm saying.
See, in those cases, the inside guy needs to bend his route in, like, towards the safety. And I don't know why he's not doing it. Yeah. Okay, so, was there anything else that I wanted to mention about the Kenneth Dixon thing? I don't know. I mean, I'm a fan of getting him it's fun for everybody. He gets seven touchdowns. He's, you know, written in the record books, everybody gets to look back and say, wow, that was great. I don't think that's a bad thing. But, yeah, as soon as it looks like someone's going to get hurt, then maybe. I don't know. I mean, I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. So I'm going to go ahead and agree to disagree with you on that one. But
it's about time you disagree with me.
what else is there to say about this game? They kicked our ass. And like you said, and like I said, they did it. It, through their strength. We can't stop the run. They ran right up the middle on us. And I think, somebody's asking, did we talk about the banner? We did. We did talk about the banner right at the beginning of the show. And you can go back and listen to it. It's going to be on meangreennation.com/podcast. You can see all the podcasts there. You can click on the button. That'll list all of them. You can subscribe on iTunes. You can subscribe via email, just in case you want to do that. I guess, talking about how Louisiana Tech can run the ball well, right up the middle. Tennessee, I guess, like beat writers are already talking about who should sit out for Tennessee against us this week. They're like, why even go full out? Why this should be a bye week. Is Tennessee going to destroy us, or are they going to destroy us? What do you?
let me pull out my magic eight ball and see what that says. But I don't know if they're going to. Okay, they're probably going to destroy us. All signs point to yes, but you never know with these type of games. Obviously, Tennessee doesn't give two craps about us. Their players aren't going to respect us. Their coaches might try to respect us a little bit. Butch Jones and Coach Canales, they have some type of history together. But their players aren't going to respect us, and I don't think that they're going to rest their players because you can't, even though we're North Texas, you can't rest your starters and then all of a sudden – you know, you get into the second quarter and it's a 7-point game and you're in a tight ball game. And then you're like, okay, well, we better put our starters in. And you can't roll that way. So, look, Tennessee has good players. Obviously, Butch Jones, the one thing he's done well at Tennessee is he's recruited well. He's shopped the groceries, you know, at the finest grocery store he can. But he can't put together a good meal. I mean, his meals taste like crap, basically. You got Jalen Hurd, you know, he ranks 38th nationally in rushing yards, 815 yards, 9 touchdowns. The quarterback, Dobbs, he's really taken off the past 4 games. He's got 8 TDs, 4 TDs rushing, basically 298 yards a game of offense in the past 4. They got a linebacker, Maben, who's got 11 tackles for losses. He's got 82 tackles on the year, which is – that's quite a bit. And then Derek Barnett is their sack leader with 6. So they've got playmakers all over the place. And, of course, it's going to be tough. It's going to be extremely tough. You go into Rocky Top, you know, and all you're doing is really hoping that you keep it close, I guess, in the first quarter. And then you say, all right, let's keep it close in the second quarter. And you just go out there and you play. And who knows what can happen if you go out there and play. It's not supposed to be raining. So it should be a beautiful day of football weather. And, hey, if they overlook us and, you know, Jeffrey Wilson gets loose, because I don't think they're going to be as aggressive as Louisiana Tech was. You know, Louisiana Tech wanted to come out, and obviously they respected us. They were very well prepared, and they shut us down. And I don't think Tennessee's going to try to shut us down. They're just going to play base defense because they don't want to show anybody anything.
Yeah, and that's where these kinds of games, you can look at them and say, you know what, maybe we have a chance, because it's not a conference game. So Tennessee can only lose from this game. I mean, that if they destroy us by 80 points, they're gonna say, well, that's expected. SEC team, one of the worst teams in the nation. 80 points, yeah, it should happen. If they win by only like 5 points, you're going to be like, what the hell, Tennessee? What are you doing? So you're an SEC team. It's one of the worst teams in the nation. So, you know, the thing for them to do is take care of business, right? Quote, unquote, take care of business. And what doing so while also not trying too hard, meaning like not pulling out all the stops. Like, we're not going to run our new stuff. It's basically going to be just base offense. You know, day one offense, day one defense. You know, they're not going to show anything crazy. They're still playing for something there. But it counts for a bowl game, so I guess it does matter. For us, we're expected to lose by a lot of points. And was it 40 and a half last time I checked? So, you know, we can basically play without fear. Whereas the Louisiana Tech game, as you mentioned, it's a conference game. They very easily could have just overlooked us, right? Yeah, it's just old North Texas. They ain't nobody to worry about. You know, but they have things to play for right now, so they're going to try real hard. And that's me rationalizing maybe a decent game. That's all I can muster right now, because Tennessee is way more talented than we are, and they're playing better football than we are playing. They've actually given some really good teams a couple of games. Now, they've messed it up and lost at the end of the game, but I don't think we have the kind of team that can do that to them, because we just don't really have our stuff together all around. this will be like an interesting test for Mike Canales. And I mean, he's not going to be our coach next year, so I guess it doesn't matter. But it's interesting for him because, you know, he got a lot of praise, maybe even overpraised for the win against UTSA, one of the worst teams in the nation, right? To be one of the worst teams in the nation, you can only get so much praise. And I don't think he got a lot of criticism for this game because I don't think you can say, well, look how he prepared the guys. Look how happy they were. I mean, you know, they didn't practice a lot during the week, and that got them ready to go versus UTSA. Locked the gate. We're family. Motivational quotes. All that contributes to winning. You know, they love, and Mike Canales even pointed to himself, they love that, you know. I put on the helmet. They respond to that. Yeah. Yeah, man. You know? Coach C, they respond to that. Okay, dude. Now, where was all that when they were getting hammered in the first quarter, right? Where's your you're jumping up and down, yeah, but did that motivate? You know, this is just a classic experiment here, right? This, you know, you apply it here and it worked, and you apply it here, it didn't work, so maybe this doesn't have an effect, or maybe there's other larger things here. So we'll see what he has. Coaching a team that just got shellacked is a little bit easier than coaching a team in any other scenario. Coaching a team that won, definitely. That's pretty hard. So we'll see what he does here with this team. A lot of the players, former players, are looking at the current players and saying, "Well, you have to do your own motivating. You have to do what's necessary. You know, it's on you. It's an individual thing. It can't be on the coaches." I just kind of want to see a respectable kind of game, but I don't know what that means. What do you want to see? Yeah, you know what I mean, like I don't want to see. I want to get blown out respectably, I guess. You know?
I don't want to see us get blown out at all. I want to see us win the game. I don't know if we can win the game. I mean, everybody can beat anybody. I mean, that's that's the way that college football is. And the biggest mismatch is our offensive line versus their defensive line. You know, last week, Louisiana Tech's defensive line, according to Football Outsiders, you know, who do a lot of analytics and advanced stuff, you know, Louisiana Tech's defensive line was ranked 14th and our offensive line was ranked in the 100s. We're facing Tennessee and their defensive line is ranked 14th, and Louisiana Tech's defensive line moved all the way up to 5th after playing us. So it tells you that they were pretty much stuffing us. But you know, I want to see us get to the second half within striking distance. And I think we could keep this game around. We certainly should be. I want us to be under the point spread, under 41. I want us to be in the 20s. Like, and I don't want anybody to be hurt. And I want DeMarcus Smith to show signs of improvement. I think that's the biggest thing I want to see him do. I want to see him be able to show that he could drop back, hit the passes that he was missing last week. I want to see our offensive line show that they can run like we've seen before. And if that happens and we're not scored touchdowns, I guess I could kind of live with it. You know, it'll be a little bit disappointing. But I just don't want to see us go up to Tennessee and before you can even flip on the game, it's 21-0. I guess the biggest thing I want to see.
Yeah, I can get behind that. I think that it's all possible. I thought that maybe we could do that against Louisiana Tech. I think we could probably run okay, somewhere 150 yards against that squad. I believe it's possible. I don't know if it's going to be, given the way that we've been playing. You know, like I said, a lot of the problems against Louisiana Tech were self-inflicted on offense. Bad passes, fumbling the ball. We could have kept it closer. I think we could have scored more than the 13 that we did. But that's kind of been our problem. The only team that we've been able to do that against, the only two teams, have been some of the worst teams in the nation. Rice and UTSA. You know, nobody else have we been able to move the ball consistently with whatever quarterback that we had. But yeah, DeMarcus Smith is the best quarterback that we have for us right now for the future. I don't want to hear about Connor Means. You know, he's not gonna. He's a freshman. He's gonna go out there and get hurt, basically. Especially with the team we got now, I'm looking forward to the new coaching staff, and I think if we got anything from that last game, it was that we had an end to the Mike Canales as head coach talk.
Right.
Yeah. I noticed that not a one person DM'd me this time or posted a thread on GoMeanGreen.com about, hey, what about Mike Canales? He's the right man for the job. There's a lot less of that after a loss, especially a loss of that magnitude and that style. So I don't want to see it again. I don't really want to. I'm not going to entertain those kinds of things, because I mean, if you want to make a case for him, that now's the time to do it after losing 56-13. Like, well, here's why: because this, and this, and that, and that. But nobody said anything. So, all right, let's move on. Unless you have anything else you want to add to this Tennessee talk, I'm going to be there. If you guys are going to be there, come tweet at me, email me. We'll hang out. We got to get a little Mean Green contingent. Me and the woman are making the trip tomorrow, so we're going to be there. And we're going to hang out. And we're leaving on Sunday, so we got to get all the action in on Saturday. We're meeting up with a friend, and if you listen at all to the Deranged Penguin podcast, my other podcast that I do, you might get to meet Brad, Mr. Bradley. He's going to show up, and he's a Mississippi Ole Miss fan, but he hadn't been to an SEC game all season, so this is like his one chance to go to an SEC game, whatever. So we're going to go to that, we're going to hang out, have a good time. So say hey, totally willing to meet up with people, fellow Mean Greeners, have a good time. You were going to say something, Greg?
I don't know. I don't think so. Sure.
You had that face where you looked like you were about to say something.
Yeah, that was my thinking face.
That Mike Leach one that everybody tweets where he's trying to decide whether or not to go for the two-point conversion.
Yeah.
I love Mr. Mike Leach. You know what? And I'd totally take Sonny Dykes. I know that was probably just a contract negotiation ploy, but man, I'd love me some air raid offense here because it'd just be fun. It's so fun. But we're gonna get to that in a second. Let's move to your prediction. Tennessee game prediction: 40 points. Just give me a number. I think we're gonna lose. How much do you think we're gonna lose by?
21.
You know, that loss last week really killed anything. Because I was already talking myself into a win. I talked myself into an upset. I was like, man, we're going to run for 200 yards. Louisiana Tech's not going to take us seriously. Kenneth Dixon hasn't done anything against us in three seasons. And then we got destroyed. So, I think we're going to lose by 50. I feel it
in my bones.
Yeah. I ain't got no positivity today, guys. Just been one of those kind of weeks. Yeah. Yeah, one of those kind of weeks for me.
Sir.
Yeah.
Sir, you just go screw yourself. Unbelievable.
Well, I'll be the first one to eat crow or whatever it is that, you know, they serve in Tennessee.
How many times have you heard a fan say that I'm going to travel 1,500 miles just to see us lose by 50?
Well, I'm not there to see us lose by 50. I'm there to see my team and see, you know, Neyland Stadium. That's what I'm there to see. I'm seeing those two things. One and two.
And to see him lose by 50.
Okay. I mean, I've only been to one of these money games, right? I'm early in my adult fandom career as a North Texas supporter. So I don't travel a lot to, like, these big stadiums all the time. I know a lot of people are going, I went to the George game, and a couple years ago I went to this game, and whatever. I've only been to the Texas game. It's in Texas. I went to that one. That was an awful feeling watching your team get smashed in front of 100,000 people. Let me tell you what.
I went to the Arkansas game, and I was afraid of my life with all those ugly-looking women there doing the woo pig suey thing. I was like, oh, my God. I know. I felt threatened. Well, I felt like deliverance was about to happen.
You know what I'm missing is, speaking of Twitter wars, get into it with, like, UTSA fans is one thing, but I kind of miss Arkansas State fans just because they get so riled up. They're, like, so hardcore Jim Rome types, right? Where, like, they can't have a friendly Twitter. They just, like, whatever. hey, 66-13, bro. Like, or whatever the final score was. Really? You're going to talk some mess to me? Really? I'm just, I don't know. And it's fun because you can just say anything about that to them. Like, even very innocuous, and they just get super upset about it. It's fun. I miss Arkansas State. I'm hoping for they come into the Conference USA, you know, sooner rather than later. Yeah, so let's move on to everybody's favorite segment, the coaching search. Who are we going to sign? Who's going to be your coach? That's our theme song. Who's going to be our coach?
Very nice. Very nicely done. Yeah, you know, I know everybody's like, man, when's the next coach search tracker coming out? Because you nailed the last one. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know when, you know, when we get the info and we're allowed to share it, we share it. And I think after last week, what happened, I think RV and the president maybe got together and said, maybe you shouldn't let this information out like you did. And then try and hunt down who let the information out and how it got to us. And then somebody within their, you know, department then leaks the information, or confirms the information to the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. And then Friday blows up as we're trying to drive to Schulenburg. And then you got all these OU people tweeting at you like, what the hell is this guy talking about? What does he know? And then Lincoln Riley issues a statement, and that statement came way too fast. So it had already been pre-scripted. I think the biggest thing with the coaching search is you're going to see these two words, predictable deniability. You're going to see it like, you know, Charlie Strong in Miami. Of course, he's probably got interest, but he's going to deny it. Lincoln Riley, he's probably got interest in this, but he's going to deny it. Oh, well, how could he have interest in North Texas? Why would he do that? Because it's $1 million raise, and I'd be interested in $1 million raise. Sure, you know, after the game, an OU booster was quoted or official was saying, you know, Lincoln Riley, we pay him handsomely, but we're going to pay him more. Well, you still, I don't think you're going to pay him like a top 10 assistant in college football. And so we're still going to be able to give him more than you. I think that was the thing that took OU fans back, was how much we were willing to pay for our coach. So, yeah, I think the president was upset with what happened. I think Lincoln Riley was upset with what happened last week, the info getting out there. And I think that, you know, basically it was, we need to tighten up the ship around here. We need to make sure that these little old people, a little old Mean Green Nation blog, isn't getting the info. I know that doesn't do anything good for you guys out there, because then you don't know what happens. But hey, we don't know what happens either. So I think it's a good sign that information isn't coming out right now. I think that's I think things are still moving forward. You know, there was supposedly some interest from the USC interim coach, Clay Helton, which I thought was very interesting that he would be interested in the job. But hey, and the other thing is, with going back to Lincoln Riley, was I think RV just wanted to get out there that he could maybe find a good coach. I think he wanted some people to pump him up, like, hey, I could do my job, damn it.
Yeah, and don't believe him? Well, he'll email you. I thought it was funny that OU fans and other people, like anybody that we mentioned, like the Arizona State guy, they take it as a personal affront that their offensive coordinator could be interested in our job. They're like, what? What? I was like, dude, I mean, yeah, like you said, you listed some reasons. Yeah, it's $1 million raise, and you get to run your own program. Like, yeah, boy, he could run. He could be here for like 3 years, and then we'll prepare him for a better one. That's all. Like, I mean, you sound very naive. Like, don't you know how these things work? You strike while the iron's hot, because there's a lot of hot new coordinators, sexy new coordinators that don't strike while the iron's hot. Then they have a bad season, and then everybody's like, "Oh yeah, remember everybody's looking at that guy? Not no more. He's not gonna take anybody's program." Yeah, you got to take it. You got to take what you can get when you can get it. And these guys are not without an ego. You know, there's career assistants, but if and those guys are not going to get, you know, jobs like the Virginia Tech coaches, right? The assistant coaches that work under Frank Beamer. They're, you know, nobody ever thought that they were going to, like Bud Foster. He was never going to get seriously considered because they're like, he's a lifer over here, career assistant. Lincoln Riley doesn't strike me as a career assistant. He wants his own gig. He wants to run his own thing. And if somebody's going to say, let me give you a $1 million raise and a program in a talent-rich area, you think you can do it? Even if it is North Texas, he's going to say, yeah, I can do it. Or he's going to consider it. He's going to interview for it. It's not outside the realm of possibility.
And the thing is that, okay, if he stays at OU for 2 to 3 more years, and they're going to be like, okay, well, you know, then he could get a better job. Yeah, his job is still going to be a G5 program. It's not going to be Ohio State. It's not going to be Texas. You don't go to a Power 5 program from being a coordinator. You most likely have to go to a G5 school. Tom Herman, one of the hottest coaching names out there, Ohio State to Houston. Okay, if Lincoln Riley, if he comes to North Texas next year and he blows it up, I mean, he wins right away, he's going to get primetime jobs like Tom Herman would. And probably even more, but he'd get the same hype because they'd say, look what this guy did at North Texas. He turned them around in 1 year. Oh my God, let's go hire him because he's young and innovative. Those are the things that would happen with him. It's not if you stay at OU for 2 to 3 more years, like you said, strike while the iron's hot. He's still going to have to go to maybe a Memphis or maybe a Houston. Sure, it's probably a little bit better of a G5 school, but are they going to pay that much more than us? Probably not either, because Houston and Memphis are paying $1.4 million to those guys. If we're willing to go up to $1.5 million, we're pretty much on par with that. We're pretty much on par with the resources that are available. So, you know, the only thing that is hurting us is the fact that we've been bad. Everything else is really there. It's just the success hasn't been there.
Yeah, and again, that doesn't stop a coach, especially a coach that thinks he can do some things, from taking a job. Todd Graham took a Rice team that was awful, made him kind of good, parlayed that into a job at Pitt, parlayed that into a job at Arizona State.
I mean, did he not go to Tulsa?
Yeah, he went to Tulsa. Yeah, I forgot. He went like everywhere. He went to Tulsa, then he went to Pitt, then he went. I mean, that's an extreme example of a you know, program hopping coach. But I mean, yeah, you got to start somewhere, you know. And there's never been a job like Dan McCarney was fond of saying, it's one of 128 FBS jobs, and they are desirable. And I think
that's all I gotta say about that.
Let's talk a little bit about soccer. The soccer team, your North Texas soccer team, they beat Marshall in the Battle of the Green Uniforms in Miami, in Florida. Won the Conference USA Championship, avenged their loss last year to Rice. Pretty much sealed John Hedlund as, you know, one of the greatest coaches in North Texas history. They won the regular season title. Conference USA title, they won the regular season title last season, they went to the conference championship game last season, they lost after Jackie Kerstein got injured, so, you know, there was like even an asterisk there, Ola Rice. Rice last season went on to play Texas, lost 3-0. This season, we face Texas Tech in Lubbock in the first round of the NCAA tournament. And that is tomorrow at 8 p.m. And I think you can watch on, like, Lubbock TV or something like that. I don't see anything where it's, like, broadcast on the regular television over the air, so you can watch it. But do follow along. I think I'm going to be in the air going to Tennessee, so you're going to have to let me know what happens in that one. But that's the first-round matchup at Texas Tech. I noticed a lot of people that follow the program for a long period of time mentioned that, hey, we went up there in 2009 and beat them. So, hey, let's repeat that.
So, if we're compared to the NCAA tournament? Is this like a 12-5 matchup here? Are we looking like 13-4, you know, 11-6?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, yeah, I didn't really like it. I don't know what to compare it to. It is kind of like that. I was looking at the bracket, but I don't know if that holds. Like, I don't know. I just realized how new I am to women's college soccer. Like, I don't know if that's, you know, like, what the typical matchups are at the 12-5 seed, you know?
Well, you need to get with it.
Yeah, I mean, well, we're all learning together, you know? Let me pull up the bracket right now just to give you an idea. And while I do this, Greg's going to vamp for us. No, so, yeah, we are the – see, how do they – they just have two sides. It's not even like a giant 6-14 tournament. 6-7-8
We're going to call it a 12-5 matchup, and we're going to call North Texas a 12 seed. And, yeah, so I feel pretty good about our upset chances, and I'm predicting that.
It's not necessarily a 12-5. All right, so we play the winner.
It is a 12-5.
Yeah, if we win this matchup, we'll play the winner of Auburn and Southeastern Louisiana. So there you go. Whatever that means. I don't know how good Auburn is. Auburn's a 4th seed. In our Florida.
There you
Florida
go.
State.
That must mean that Texas Tech is a 5 seed because you always have the 4 and the 5 playing the second round. So that must mean we're sitting in that glorious 12 seed spot, and bam, you know, we just coming out and we're going to snipe Texas Tech on the open plane.
I guess we are a 5 seed, huh? And I realize how little I know about women's college soccer. Whatever, man. There's a printable bracket.
You know,
has anybody filled out their bracket, the women's college bracket? No? Nobody's doing that? Okay.
I did it today.
Yeah. The championship game is in Cary, North Carolina. You know, that old place. So, yeah. Tune in tomorrow. We'll be following it closely as we can. It's not going to be, you know, dominating the headlines, I don't think. Yeah, somebody reminds us, hey, don't forget about basketball. Let's talk a little bit about basketball. It's not on our list of things to talk about, but you have some hot sports opinions about the basketball team? I know you printed out your rankings, your preseason rankings.
Absolutely, and I had North Texas power ranked at 13 out of 14. Didn't really give them a great, great initial start. Of course, that can all change over time. I think I predicted them to have like 15 wins. I mentioned this before. It seems like we always say that crap on here, but
we are
that's
no
tough. When you bring in the amount of newcomers that we brought in, and you expect that team to gel right away, it's not going to happen. They got to play on the floor with each other for a long period of time. This is not how you win at the lower in the mid majors. How you win? You could win like this at the upper majors, but you're not getting those huge recruits. I'll give Tony Benford credit because he's brought in good players. Okay, he's brought in talented players, but the product on the floor, they don't play as a team. There's just a lot of street balling out there. In regards to this year's team, they're very guard-oriented. There's Jeremy Combs in the post, but there's nobody really else that is a scoring threat down there. You got Ricky Bryce Jr., the 7-footer, but he's raw. You got Fuller, who's a freshman. He's just a huge body, a 6'8". I think he's like 260. You know, I was saying you wish he was on the football team. I'm not sure if he's a scoring threat. And then you have the other guy, what's his name? Katenda, or the transfer Eric from Notre Dame.
Yeah,
He didn't play much in Notre Dame. So exactly how much is he going to contribute? I think he's just a role player out there. You know, the thing you lose, we lost Voss, so you lose a lot of. He was able to space the floor. You know, he had that 15-foot jumper. He was a good passer that they could put at the top of the key, and Jeremy Combs could work down in the post. So, okay, did we have that guy this year, or are you expecting Jeremy Combs to be the guy that steps out and hits the 15-footer? I mean, he's worked on the jump shot, Combs has, because he obviously needed to develop something else. But I mean, our best lineup may be four guards and Jeremy Combs, really. Because there's so much more you can do with spreading the floor out there. Because if you got guys like Jamichael Reis, Jamichael Brown, or J. Michael Reese, Jamichael Brown, Dekki Johnson, DeAndre Harris, those are guys that can get into the lane, slashers. So you don't really want to put a guy like Bryce out there, a seven-footer, to stand in the post and clog the lane and draw defenders to him. You want to spread the floor out. So there's talent there, but I'm just not sold on them being able to put it together in time for conference play.
Yeah, and that's on Tony Bedford. I mean, I agree. We talked about this before, that this needs to be – we need to have an offense. We need to have – yeah, we need to have an abbreviation. We need to have – like, we don't have an offense. Like, at this level, you need a system. You plug guys that maybe are specifically talented to fit your system, that grow into your system, and then every 4 years when you have a load of seniors, you make a nice little run, right? That's the kind of squad that you need at this level. We don't have that. We have what? We're just like, we're going to get our athletes out there and do some things. Like you said, you can do that when you have future NBA players. You can't necessarily do it at this level. And that's, you know, again, that's not a knock on any of these guys. I mean, we have guys that are professionals, like not just not NBA players. They're professionals out there doing some things. You mentioned Colin Voss. He's playing overseas. And Jordan Williams, whose signed jersey I have, is in England playing, and he's like the leading scorer. I mean, we got guys that are out there, and this is not, you know, this is not even to mention a couple of guys from previous classes that are playing overseas. We got professionals. We have good players here, but we don't have NBA impact dudes that you can just say, you know what, we're just gonna have, you know, the most basic offensive system and really just out talent people.
And we're in a tough conference too. I mean, UAB played really well last year in the conference tournament and in the NCAA tournament. Old Dominion was a team that a lot of people thought they should have gotten in the tournament. So we may end up being a two-bid league. I mean, you got teams like Western Kentucky that, you know, they got a lot of history with them. And Louisiana Tech and UTEP is always a good basketball team, and they're probably going to be good this year too. So we're in a really tough basketball conference, and we're trying to win with, I mean, like you said, what exactly is our basketball identity? Are we a team that's going to slow the pace down and play grinded out defense like Stephen F. Austin? No, we're not going to do that. Are we going to be like Shaka Smart and press and 40 minutes of hell and get up and down the court? No, we probably can't do that either. What exactly are we trying to do then? Well, we're trying to run, you know, motion offense. Yeah, but I'm not sure Tony Bedford knows what the motion offense is from what I've seen out there.
I think that's another thing that we've always said, that every time we talk basketball, you're like, I don't know what he's doing. I ain't no motion offense either, so.
I mean, you know, who is the creator of the motion offense? Really, it's Bob Knight. Okay. The guy that taught me the motion offense learned from Bob Knight. I think I got some respectability when it comes to the motion offense, and that is not a motion offense, sir. But, you know, towards the end of the year last year, they went on the 5-game winning streak. And they were really running motion offense. They were running set plays. So, and they were getting looks for Combs underneath the basket because, like we said, Voss, you know, hitting shots, we spread the floor. We were getting good 3-point looks. We were knocking those down. So, you know, I think Tony Bedford, he saw how guard dominant Conference USA was. So he was like, that's what I want to do. I got to go out. Find me some guards that can play. Okay, well, that's good and all. We got guards that can play, but again, you know what are we? What are they playing in, Tony? What are they playing in?
Yeah,
it's a street ball. It's a street ball philosophy that North Texas.
I mean, yeah, you can, and again, you can win with like a four, you know, four out offense, right? Driving and kicking, you can win with that if you have exceptionally talented dudes that can get to
Iowa State.
Yeah. But if you have, I mean, and again, the pieces need to fit together. There was one season under Tony Bedford where we couldn't shoot the three, right? It was like, well,
it's been a lot of seasons.
Yeah, the one guy that we had to shoot the three, he was injured, or he was not eligible, and then this other kid that we got to shoot threes, he just missed everything. We gotta do a better job than that. We can't. It screams program that is not well put together, and here we are again, a formerly solid mid-major team. crossing our fingers and hoping that the coach figures things out. And I hope he does, for the sake of all these kids out there, because I'm definitely rooting for him. Did we get any Twitter questions? I didn't see any. I know we kind of tweeted the thing late. I think people were mostly beat down. No, I think what people were mostly interested in, the big Twitter question was, who's Rick Vitale? Did anybody see the banner? That dominated the discussion today. And there's really, honestly, not a whole lot to talk about right now. The football season's winding down. For other teams, this is trying to figure out, are we bowl eligible? What do we need to figure out? Can we win the conference? Placement towards the end of the season. For us, we're wondering how this thing's going to end and, what's going to be in the future. And we got a nice little update from Billy, GoMeanGreen.com's resident recruiting expert. Excuse me, I'm burping over here. And he wrote up a nice little post for us on MeanGreenNation.com. I told you, Mean Green Nation Zone, Billy. He basically said, he just outlined four things, and I kind of want to get your thought on it, because I know you follow recruiting a little bit more than I do. He says there's four things that that the new guys are going to need to figure out. What to do with our four current commits. Tyrone Middleton, who has another offer. Deion Hare Griffin has a few other offers. Chase Coakley, no other offers. Joseph Ozogwu, no other offers. What are you going to do about them? Is this guy, what kind of recruits is this guy going to get? And what kind of class is he going to get in here that first season? Because it's going to have an effect. Do you have any thoughts on that one?
I say keep the recruits, because we're at a point where you really can't turn down people. If you only got four at this point, and the coach is going to be getting in here late, you need everybody you can get. It doesn't matter who or what you kind of think of them. You figure it out later. You just do your best to try and keep them and hope that the previous coaching staff evaluated somewhat good on these guys. So obviously you don't want to see them lose a scholarship or whatnot. But if the next coach chooses to do that because he feels like he's got another guy lined up to replace him that is better, then, that's okay. That's fine. The other thing, what was the other question? I was focused on that one.
Well, that's the big question. Everything else is kind of speculation. Like, it really boils down to, if he gets in here, is he going to be able to put together any kind of class? And will that class be Texas-based? And will be able to, those all kind of wrap up into the same question. Can the guy recruit? And can he recruit that first season? Immediately, say he gets hired this week. What kind of class is he going to pull together in basically 2 months?
If he's hired at the beginning of December, and it's a splashy guy, let's say it's Lincoln Riley, I think you can put in a decent class. If it's a guy that's not as well known, like if we make another Dan McCartney hire, then you're not going to get more than 10 people that would probably end up committing to us. So, I think one of the things is what is the new coach? What is his system? What is his style? What does he do? Is he, was slinging all around the field? And it's a fun offense, because then I'm sure he could attract quite a few people. But then is he more of, it's Paul Johnson. He gets fired at Georgia Tech and we pick him up and we run the triple option. I don't know what type of coach or what type of recruits that guy could get. That was probably a horrible example, so I'm sorry about that. But
I kind of follow what you're saying. You look at Sonny Dykes, right? The guy, I was like, oh, man, wouldn't it be great if we got him, if he just kind of really hated his gig there at Cal and was like, I'll just take any old team that's in Texas. I think his first year at Cal, it was horrible. It was like 1-11. He got a lot of new guys to try to fit into his system. It didn't really work out. I think Mike Leach kind of had a similar year, because they have a very specific kind of system where they're like, well, we need very specific kind of guys for our roles, and it's hard to transition with like a quote-unquote traditional offense. You look at it at even Louisiana Tech. Like Skip Holtz had a down year that first year when he was transitioning to his kind of offense, because it was Sonny Dykes' squad and his guys, and then they turned that into, you know, what you see today, and you needed to recruit to that. So, yeah, there's going to be a first-year awfulness, I think, in terms of on-field play, but we really need to see whether he's going to – some of the, if that's because he's getting his guys in and he's playing a lot of freshmen, that's fine. If it's because it's a continuation of terribleness and also we didn't get any guys in, that's bad.
I think – and this goes back to the coach search just a little bit. Is you look at the recent success or the successes that North Texas has had throughout the history. It's been one of we run the ball and we play great defense. And would the fans be upset if they found a coach that, you know, he was basically that was what he does. We're going to play great defense and we're going to run the ball. And, you know, we may be, you know, we may not sling it all around the field or do whatever, but, you know, that's what we're going to focus on. Because that's what has worked at North Texas over the history of time, you know. And so now we're going to bring in a coach that, you know, is going to do most likely do things the way that have never been done at North Texas, other than Todd Dodge, and that didn't work out very well. But we're hoping that this guy is a little bit, you know, more organized and brings in, you know, college-level assistants. But still, you know, we're probably going to ask the next coach to do something at North Texas that's never been done before. I thought that was kind of interesting, you know, thinking about somebody had mentioned on somewhere else I was listening to, you know, hire what your team has done well in the past. You know, find somebody that fits that mold. And I was thinking about North Texas, and I was like, well, you know, it's kind of the guy that nobody wants. They want somebody different. But what if they did get that guy? Yeah. What if you got, like, a Brett Venables from Clemson?
Maybe, yeah. Well, I mean, we've had two eras where that was good. And that was, one, Hayden Fry in the 70s, and two, Daryl Dickey in the early 2000s. I mean, there's been some other winning times, but those are the two glory times that everybody talks about. They look back, and we'd like to, you know, what was it? I forget the word for make a saint, of Hayden Fry, right? And everybody came in that era. And then we look at the early, the Daryl Dickey years. Somebody even say, oh, what if we just got Dickey back? Yeah, and those are run the ball, win with defense. But that's college football. I mean, that's football, right? Everybody, there's a lot of teams have won with run the ball, playing defense, so that's not so unusual. I don't think that people, the majority of people, majority of fans and future fans would be so surprised to see anything different from North Texas. If we threw the ball around and scored a lot of points, they'd be like, great, now they're playing like, you know, and they'd list off a bunch of Big 12 teams. Now they're playing like Oklahoma, who has been throwing the ball around for 15 years. They're playing like Texas Tech, which has been doing it for 15 years. So the people that are in the North Texas fans, students and things, that watch college football, they watch Big 12 football. And they've been throwing the ball around for at least, like, as totally as a conference for about 8 years now, right? So that's not going to be a big jump. The big scary thing is all the baby boomers that grew up during the Hayden Fry era, maybe. And all the people that came after, they're going to be like, well, my dad, you need a tight end to score a touchdown, you know, like, you ain't had a tight end, I don't know what you're doing.
Yeah, well, you know, those guys are on the college football playoff committee, and they just put Iowa above Baylor.
So. Well, I mean, if we can have those problems, then, you know, things are going good, and I will remember that, I'll remember this time, you know what I mean, I won't be so upset. But, you know, Baylor doesn't look that good without their guy. Anyway, I don't foresee that being a problem at all. I mean, as long as we win, that's something that we haven't done in the last decade consistently, that it's going to be a big change. I don't know how we'll handle that. So however we do it, that's going to be the way that we do it. You know what I'm saying?
It's okay. Yeah,
it's going to be, now you have a chance to really start from scratch. And there's no history like, well, we've always run the triple option here. No, we haven't. You know, like, well, we've had good running backs. That's a good thing. You still have good running backs in an offense that try to get the ball to playmakers. The air raid primarily tries to get the ball to playmakers through passing the ball, just because it's easy. You can have five guys throw the ball out there. but the idea of spreading the ball around is the underlying philosophy of that. So if you have a great running back, get him the ball. Get him the ball, however you want to do it. There's lots of ways to get him the ball. Dana Holgorsen has transitioned from a primarily throwing guy to a guy that I think they run the ball like 60% of the time now. A lot of that is just getting the guy ball to guys that, you know, they have there. And they score a lot of points still. If we have nothing else, I think we're ready to wrap this up.
I'm ready. I'm done. Thursday nights past my bedtime. If you don't know, ladies and gentlemen, but Adam is sitting in a robe right now.
I am sitting in a robe.
Creeping me out. So
Let me tell you what. I'm nice and comfy, son. Yeah, I feel good. This robe is. I just bought a robe, and I have the windows open. A nice, cool November breeze, like the beginning of winter air, I guess. Is I feel it. It feels good. It's time to wear a robe. ladies and gentlemen, thanks for listening to the Mingry Nation podcast. I think I just briefly lost Greg, or he really was creeped out by my robe. Please subscribe to the show and leave a review on iTunes. That way other Mean Green people, followers, can find the show. Send the show to friends, family. Let them know. If you have ideas about how the show could be better, you have tips. If you know about the new coach that's going to be hired and you want to sneak it to us, you can leave it at podcast@meangreennation.com. Really anything at meangreennation.com. It all comes to me, and I will be able to read it and respond. If you want to contribute, so maybe you want to write, you're like, I got some things I want to write, you can. Same thing. blog@meangreennation.com. I'm on Twitter, Mean Green Nation. Greg is on Twitter. He's MGN_breakdown. And I think that's pretty much all the ways you can get a hold of us. We're pretty available, pretty public. So y'all do that. Greg, are you back?
I am.
Okay, good. Briefly lost your video there. I guess you really were just...
I was done.
Yeah. God damn it, I said I was done. yeah, so anything you want to say before we wrap it up?
You know, like Kevin Garnett said, anything's possible, folks.
You've been saying that for so long. All right, cool. Yeah, I think what we didn't do was preview the Conference USA games, but I don't think anybody really cares. You know, I'll tell you right now. Charlotte's going to pull an upset against UTSA. ODU's going to whoop UTEP. FAU's going to beat Middle Tennessee. I called it. USM's going to beat Rice. And Marshall's going to beat FIU. There you go. There's your predictions.
And Tennessee is going to lose to North Texas. What? Who was that? Who was that? Who said that?
It's the voice from the great beyond. They know all. Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, we're done. Thanks for listening. Go Mean Green.